What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Seven Figure Flipping Podcast. This is Bill Allen. On today's show, I've got a guy that I'm interviewing who has done 23 deals in the last like 14 months with spending $0 on marketing. So I think you want to listen to what he has to say. So that's all I'm going to say. Enjoy the show.
My name is Bill Allen, and I'm the leader of a group of elite house flippers and wholesalers called Seven Figure Flipping. We don't brag or show off our success, but instead let integrity and stewardship be our guide. We are dedicated to helping people unlock the freedom they desperately need. If you ask other real estate investors, they will say to keep your secrets quiet. But we believe in abundance, not scarcity. And that's why we are the elite. We are Seven Figure Flipping, and this podcast is our playbook.
What's up, everybody? I am back and I got an incredible show today. I'm actually really excited. We're going to talk. There's going to be a little something in here about not spending any money on marketing. And I know a lot of you are spending a lot of money, or you're actually not getting started because you think it's going to cost you a lot of money to find some deals. So we'll talk about that a little bit and just get to know my guest. So I'm excited today. I got Josh Walworth on the show. Josh, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me, Bill.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you tell everybody just a little bit about yourself, a quick intro? It always helps in the beginning for folks to understand kind of where you came from and what you're doing now.
Sure. Yeah. Well, my name is Josh Walworth. I own Lookout Holdings and Fieldstone Homebuyers. We are primarily a fix and flip business, but aspiring to build a long-term rental portfolio as well. I live in Traverse City, Michigan, which is in Northwest Michigan, with my wife, Linda, and our two little boys, Elijah and Ezra, who are 9 and 5 and a lot of fun, a little bit crazy. But I grew up here in Michigan, kind of on the opposite end of the state in a rural farming, working class community. Decided to get out of there right after high school, went to college and got a degree in entrepreneurial business, which was pretty new at my university at the time. And I had a keen interest in real estate even back then. Like the flipping shows were just starting to become really popular on TV. A lot of stuff around zero down investing in real estate, and it was all really interesting to me. So came out of college with a big goal to be an entrepreneur and to own my own business and get involved in real estate. And pretty quickly, a little thing called the Great Recession happened. And of course, real estate got decimated. I saw both of my parents close their small businesses. One of them filed bankruptcy as a result. And all of a sudden, being an entrepreneur and pursuing real estate didn't seem feasible for me. So I went the corporate route, did that for a long time, 16 or 17 years, corporate America, climbed the ladder. And then fast forward to the beginning of 2023. So like New Year's time, I was going to be turning 40 that year. And I had that on my mind a lot and just sort of thinking about where I was at in life and if I was happy with that. And I wasn't in a lot of ways. I did have a really good job. I admired the company that I worked for. I was making really good money, especially on Midwest terms where I live. But I wasn't passionate about the industry. I wasn't fulfilled by the work. I really never was, despite doing it for almost two decades. And ultimately, I was pretty frustrated with myself that I allowed so many years to go by building someone else's castle, not working on my own. So I decided it was time to start building something. I had flipped three houses leading up to this. So three houses in 3 years. So very much a hobby or a pastime. But I liked it a lot, and it felt like something that I could scale into a meaningful business. So set a goal in January of 23 to do 12 houses in 12 months. We kind of got there. We bought 12 houses in 12 months, closed on the last one, or put the last one under contract in December 28th. So really by the skin of our teeth. And then we flipped 8 of those. We kept one as a long-term rental and then rolled 3 into this year. And then in January of this year, first week, about a year to the date that I set a goal to start building something, I lost my job. I was laid off from my corporate job, as part of restructuring and downsizing. And just took that as sort of the kick in the pants that I needed to start pursuing real estate full time. And that's where we're at now.
Okay. I got a ton of questions from that. So you were doing all that. So you bought 12 houses last year in 2023 while you had a full-time job?
Yes.
Okay. How do you do that?
It was not easy. And honestly, when I set the goal, it seemed like more of a dream than something that was actually achievable, because we had no pipeline at that point. I wasn't actively looking for deals. I didn't have relationships with wholesalers. I was finding properties on auction.com or InvestorList. But we got two right away, like in January and February, picked up two. And I'm like, all right, we're on pace. We've got two in 2 months. And just kind of kept chugging along from there. I did get pretty bogged down 5 months in, right around the time that I joined the Runway group. And I ended up getting some really good advice. I was struggling with whether or not to leave my job because it was becoming a lot. We had no general contractors, so we're managing all the subs across, gosh, at that time, probably just two or three projects, but it was a lot. I was traveling a lot for my job. So hopped on a coaching call with Adam Whitney, and it might have been awesome. I don't know. I got good advice from both of them. But anyways, they're like, what are you doing? What's taking up the most of your time? And I'm like, I'm wrangling all these subs all the time. I've got a roofing guy, siding guy, flooring guy, plumber at multiple sites. And like, it sounds like project management work. Why don't you get a project manager? And so we did. And I brought on a project manager early in the year. She works part-time for me. She's also my mom. So hi, mom. And it just made a world of difference. It took a huge weight off of my shoulders to have her. She's also local to the market that I was investing in, which is about 4 hours from where I live. So that was a huge challenge. I wasn't able to go back and forth as much as I needed to. Bringing on the project manager helped us to scale.
Okay, so now you just hit me with something else. You have a full-time job, and your market is 4 hours away from where you live. So these are all reasons why people don't get started. I'm in too expensive an area, or I'm not going to flip in my backyard, and I have a full-time job. Is all like excuses why not to. Yeah, so why did you decide to pick a market that was 4 hours from where you live while you had a full-time job?
It was the area that I grew up. So I knew the area really well. It's a lot of small rural towns. There was not a lot of competition. There continues to not be a lot of competition in those smaller towns. In Michigan, people are hitting Grand Rapids and the Detroit metro area pretty heavily. So I wasn't running up against a lot of competition, and I knew the areas really well. I could underwrite the property quickly and figure out what it was going to be worth when we were done with it. I had some contractor relationships in the area as well.
Okay. So you had a competitive advantage. This is what I talk about all the time. Like, where did you grow up? Where did you go to college? What do you know well? Do you have somebody in an area? Anytime I talk to somebody who's in an expensive market, doesn't want to start in their backyard, these are the things that I go through. It's like, what is your competitive advantage? What's an area that you know well that you don't have to learn already? And it's pretty much a lot of what I did when I was in Maryland. I flipped my first house in Maryland, and then I knew I was moving to Pensacola. Like, I love Pensacola. I've lived there three other times already. I knew the area. I knew where I wanted to be. I knew where the houses were going to be. I just started studying it and learning it while I was still in Maryland. And yep. And then went there. And then when I came here, I moved to Nashville. I was like, I don't have the money to flip or wholesale in Nashville. It's just too expensive to get a deal at that time, I felt right. like. And so I started studying Chattanooga. And the thing I loved about Chattanooga is it was like a lookalike market for Pensacola. Approximately the same number of people, approximately the same number of that same similar types of income, similar grouping of price points and houses, similar median home price, like all that stuff. And it was just a stone's throw from Nashville. So I was like, hey guys, everybody's complaining here about how expensive it is. And I would drive a whole bunch of buyers over to Chattanooga. So it worked really well for me. And then I just started studying it, and we set up shop there, did really well there for years. So what's your competitive advantage? Like, what do you have that others don't have, and think through that? Exactly. That's awesome. So I want to ask you kind of maybe a strange question, but, your mom is your project manager. She deals well with the contractors. They don't give any pushback for her, anything like that. You said you're about 40, so I can only imagine she's probably older than that. So how does that go? Because I think a lot of people are I'm just curious. I'm like genuinely curious about how she stepped into that role. What did she do before? And then what did you look like? Why did you hire her instead of somebody else?
Yeah. I mean, growing up, my mom did a lot of administrative type jobs. She was a secretary at our dentist's office. She was a teacher's aide at my school when I was a kid. My family, my grandparents had a small retail store that my mom still continues to help manage today. So she had some business management experience. She owned a business for a while when I was growing up. Her and my stepfather ran a banquet hall, did weddings and catering and things like that. So she had business experience, but really it's, we've been learning together along the way. We don't have construction or real estate backgrounds, but you know, she's like 5 foot nothing and can actually be pretty scary. She will fight for me and fight for what's right. She does a lot better job of holding contractors accountable than I do. She'll walk these properties and make them come back two or three times until the job's done right. So yeah, but it has been a learning experience. So we're very much still figuring it out.
That's awesome. So she it sounds like she's pretty tough.
She is. Yeah.
Okay. That's great. That's awesome. I'm excited for you guys. That's really cool. And I always like, there's a mother daughter group in Top Gun also that we spent some time with from Texas. I was out in that event a few weeks ago and it's just really cool to see them working together. It was really awesome to see that, they're partners in their business and it was just really cool. Okay. So you told me just kind of before we started that you've listened to almost every podcast. So you've been listening to the podcast for a while. You were flipping 3 houses in 3 years. You started thinking about doing this in like 2007, 2008, all of that stuff. What took you so long to kind of jump in and join the Runway Group? It sounds like you joined us in 2023 last year. So yeah. Like, what was that like? Like, what were you sitting on the sidelines for? What was stopping you from kind of doing more and then jumping in with us?
Yeah. I mean, initially, you know, it was pretty devastating for my family going through 2008 and seeing what my parents went through. And so I definitely had a fear about entrepreneurship at that point and not wanting to go through what they went through. And then I got sort of sucked into the corporate world and felt like that's where I wanted to be, you know, despite just kind of feeling this tug of wanting to go back to being an entrepreneur or wanting to try to be an entrepreneur. But I continued to remain interested in real estate and just struggled to talk myself into taking the risk to go out and find a deal. You know, I've always had imposter syndrome. You know, you're not smart enough. You don't have the work ethic to do this. You don't come from the right background. You're not going to be able to find the money. Not organized enough. So a lot of that stuff would play in my head and talk me out of it. You know, despite listening to hundreds and hundreds of hours of podcasts and reading books and, you know, being a member on a lot of different real estate forums, I couldn't take the leap. And honestly, my first deal that we ever did, it came to me almost by accident. Someone brought it to me and like put a deal in my lap that I couldn't pass up on. And thankfully they did, because that's how I got my start.
But that was like 4 years ago. Is that right?
Yeah, that was 4 years ago.
And so then you did like one house a year for a couple of years, and then you started kind of scaling that in 2023. And when did you come into the Runway program?
Probably May or June of last year.
Okay. May or June of last year. So you were already like decided to ramp up your business. So what made you say, yeah, I want to come into this group? Like, you seemed like you were already doing it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we were just getting started and I knew if I was going to have a chance to scale it, I needed to get around people who were doing it at a higher level than I was. My friend Jordan always uses the line, your network is your net worth. And I really love that line. It kind of goes along with you're the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. And I didn't have any friends who were entrepreneurs or were involved in real estate. And I just wanted to get around people who were doing it at a higher level than me, so I could learn from them and be motivated by them. And so once we got a few deals under our belt in 2023 and it felt like we were building something, and that's when I felt good about, you know, spending the money to join the mentorship program.
Nice. Okay. So how long did you listen to the podcast for? Was it like years, or did you like binge listen to it for like a year?
Years. Yeah. Like I said, I was going back. I've listened to it since before you were even hosting it.
Like you would listen to it like live, like when they were coming out then. So before 2019.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's wild. Cool. Well, okay. Let's go through maybe a deal. I'm interested to hear kind of some of the numbers in your market and I'm definitely interested to know how you get deals with zero marketing dollars. So why don't we start there? Like you've got like 12 properties now, and it sounds like you're not spending any money on marketing. So how do you do that?
Yeah. So we picked up 12 last year. We had 12 under contract this year. We just had one fallout yesterday. So we're at 11 right now in the first 2.5 months of the year. And we've never paid for marketing at all.
So that's 23 houses. Is that like 12 last year and 11 this year total?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, you need to tell me how you do that. So.
Well, exclusive of our very first deal, which a family member brought to me, that's how I got started. After that, I started finding deals on auction.com. The second property I ever bought was a foreclosure auction. And we've done probably 7 or 8 of those now, and I've had a lot of luck there. I don't necessarily recommend that as a way to get started. They're risky and have some nuance that a normal property doesn't. We are almost always buying them completely sight unseen. So you have no interior access until after closing. And there's always surprises. But we have found a lot of properties in that avenue. And then I would cruise InvestorLift and Facebook Marketplace to find deals. And then started building wholesaler relationships. And some additional great advice that I got from Adam. Right after I joined the program, I felt like I needed to start a marketing company because our top of funnel activity was really lumpy. You know, we'd have a week where we bought 2 houses, and then we might go 2 months making very few offers, let alone buying any property. So I was kind of worried about the consistency of our deal flow. So I got on this call and wanted him to tell me what's the best way to start marketing. And he asked the question, does every wholesaler in Michigan know who you are? And I'm like, no. Well, why? And like, I don't know. I don't even know who all the wholesalers in Michigan are. And so he gave me a tip. He's like, go into Google and type in sell my house fast in X city, you know, whatever city you're investing in, Kalamazoo, Michigan. And all these websites are going to pop up, which are landing pages for wholesale companies where they're getting leads on, you know, for potential sellers. Put in your real name. Put in a fake address and your real contact info, and they're going to call you pretty quickly trying to buy your house. Tell them, hey, I'm actually an investor and I'd really like to get on your buyer's list and get to know your dispositions team. And so I did that, and I met a lot of wholesalers that way, and have forged several really strong relationships with some of the larger wholesalers in Michigan now, and have built relationships with them. I will take them out for lunch. I call them, I text them, I make fair offers on properties and make a point not to retrade the deal unless something just totally unforeseen pops up that we didn't know about. And we follow through and we close quickly. And now I have relationships with wholesalers that their deals are never getting posted on InvestorLift or going out to a list. They're literally calling me first and running it by me to see if I want it because they want to work with me. And that's been huge for us. One of those relationships in particular, I bought 5 houses from them this year alone.
And you found that person just by Googling, you know, we buy houses in your local area.
Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Why don't we talk about a deal? I'd like to see kind of some of the numbers in your area. It sounds like if nobody else is flipping there, it's a market where you said there's not a lot of activity. So I'm curious about, you know, price points, profits, all that stuff. If we go through a deal, maybe 2 of them, like you talked about, I can kind of understand some of that, and then it might spawn some other kind of tips, tricks, things like that.
Yeah. So I have a couple pulled up here. One of them is the first deal I ever did, but it happened to be in Florida. So it wasn't in the market that I'm investing in now. Did you want to hear about that one, or I can go?
Yeah. Okay. So you're in Michigan, and just so everybody remembers, you got a full-time job. You graduated from college with entrepreneurial business degree, which I'm sure I'll ask about that eventually. And then you watched the crash happen and the Great Recession in, 8, 9, and then you went and went into a corporate job. And so this is, what year is this, like 2020?
2020 is the first deal that I did, yeah.
Okay, so right. It's 2020, and this is the first one that comes across your desk, and it's in Florida. And you're like, That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea. My father-in-law brought me this deal. My wife's parents actually live in South America. He had a business acquaintance that he'd known for decades. And the gentleman owned a house in Orlando, Kissimmee, right on the south side of Orlando. He had bought it new in 1995. Fast forward to 2020, his wife had passed away a couple years prior. COVID was happening. He was stuck in Peru at the time due to the COVID lockdowns and couldn't leave. Kind of on hard times and really needed to free up some cash. And all he really had was his home in Orlando. And so my father-in-law brought it to me and I'm like, well, this kind of seems crazy. It's probably a dump or he's going to want too much money for it. He ended up offering to sell it to us for what he had paid for it in 1995, which was $130,000. So it seemed like a great deal. I ended up finding a local realtor who I didn't know at the time, had never sold a house. I'd called the brokerage trying to find out, like, can someone go to this house and make sure it's standing and take some photos for me and see what it looks like and let me know what it's worth and maybe I could give you the listing if we buy it. And so they gave me a rookie realtor, Judy, who turned out to be fantastic. But she walked the house for me and said, hey, it's like a time capsule from 1995 inside of this house. It was fully furnished with like wicker furniture and floral pattern couches. And but it's like brand new on the inside, a little dusty and pretty rough on the outside. The roof was in bad shape. It was covered in moss. The lawn was like knee deep. But she's like, this thing is probably worth $240,000. So we get it under contract. I drove during COVID, you couldn't fly, in my wife's van from Northern Michigan to Florida. And I actually lived in this house for a month and found contractors to do the work. It didn't end up needing a ton. I got my sheet pulled up here. We spent about $22,000 on rehab. I bought it.
What'd you think you were going to spend?
I had no idea, Bill. I wish I did, but
you were just really, like $110,000 difference between sale price and purchase price. I got to be able to make money on.
Yeah.
This.
The realtor said it was in pretty good shape. So I didn't think it would be a lot. Got down there. It was pretty scary.
All right. Let me ask some questions before we keep going. So did she send you pictures when she went to look at it?
Yes.
Okay. She wasn't just like, it's in pretty good shape. And Judy, brand new realtor, you were like, oh, okay, Judy's probably right. So she sent you photos, video, like you got all that stuff ahead of time. So you got to see the inside of it before you bought it.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. Why did your father-in-law know when he had a friend or somebody that he knew that had a problem with a house, how did he know to send it to you?
Yeah, I'm really not sure. I mean, they didn't have a lot of connections in the U.S. So I was one of the few people that they knew in the U.S. that might be able to help this guy sell his property. He trusted me. I think he knew that I had an entrepreneurial attitude. I had had a couple small side hustles that I had done along the way and was always looking for some type of side hustle or project. So he thought it might be interesting for me financially, and he thought we might be able to help his friend as well. So I believe that's why he decided to bring it to me. They didn't have a lot of options.
English. Did you say they don't speak English?
No.
Okay, so I wonder when you were telling the story, I immediately went to. Does your father-in-law know that you listen to a ton of real estate podcasts? Does your father-in-law know that you have a dream to get into real estate for the last, 15 years before that or something? Does he know? What's that?
I don't think he did.
Really? Your wife never told him, like, hey, Josh is always listening to real estate podcasts and he's talking about real estate when they talk and things like that?
I'm honestly not 100% positive. I don't believe so, but maybe.
I would be interested, maybe after you ask your wife after the show, like, because I'm telling you, most of the people, and the reason why I ask this, I think is really important. This was your first deal. This is something that probably created some belief shift and pattern in you that it's possible.
Absolutely.
And changed the entire trajectory of your real estate future. So if you really think about that, what if you know, they never brought you this deal? What if they hadn't known that you might be able to help? So it could be the entrepreneurial thing, the thing that you're always like interested in making money or doing a deal. But I honestly wonder, because you were listening to the show, you said for, I mean, it was way before 2020. Like I bought the company in 2019. So if it was before me.
If you want bigger pockets, you can probably find posts where I'm introducing myself as a real estate investor in like 2012. And, you know, it was 8 years later until I actually made a deal.
In 2012, I was probably sitting in England giving you advice because I had done like one or two deals at that point, rental properties and things. And I thought I knew what I was talking about. So, I just wonder. Because I think this stuff is important. Like if you don't put yourself out there, if you don't talk about what you're going to do in the future, then this opportunity doesn't actually present itself. So that could be like such a key thing in the future. And it doesn't really matter now, right? Now it's just
interesting.
It's kind of moot, doesn't really matter to you. However, it does matter to that person listening who is like, you know what? I want to do real estate, but I'm not telling anybody that I want to do it. I want to flip a house, but I'm not going to talk about it until after I do it. I want to wholesale a house. I want to buy an apartment. I want to buy a rental. I want to do all these things. They've been thinking about it for years. They're sitting on the sidelines. They're listening to podcasts. They're on Bigger Pockets. They're in the forums. They're reading the books. They're doing all the things, but they're not telling anybody about it. And so then that opportunity passes them by that could have been theirs because they didn't talk about it enough. Somebody didn't say, hey, what is that book you're reading? You know, at work. I have people at work, like I realize I was doing the same thing for years. For years, I was doing all of this like in a vacuum, in a bubble, like not talking about it. And it might look like I talk about it a lot now because I do. And I really promote and tell people to go talk about it and share your dream, share your goal, share your hopes, share everything that you're thinking about, because you never know, the person that sees it says, oh, I might have a connection for you. I might know this. So I don't want to let this pass. I don't want to pass this up too quick, because there's somebody listening to this who's probably been listening to the show for years and is like, you know what? That's me. Like, I never talk about this. I never tell anybody. Nobody at my church actually knows that I could help them. Nobody, and I have the skill set. Like, I have the studied skill. I just haven't been able to put it in practice yet because I haven't been given the right opportunity yet. And that's it. Like, you were building the muscle behind the scenes, and then your father-in-law just happened to present you an opportunity that you were, and then you had a choice. You were like, this sounds crazy. Like, should I do this? Like, I can't do this. I don't know if I can do this. I might be able to do this. I actually can do this. I should do this. I'm going to do this. And that process probably took some time too for you to go through it. And that is the catalyst. Like, we can talk about all the 23 deals. We can talk about everything else. But like that right there, I think is probably the most interesting thing that you've said so far that I think most people would miss because they're not out there talking about it.
Yeah. And I would piggyback on that to say, definitely put yourself out there. I as we started growing and scaling and we were doing a lot more properties, I don't think was embarrassed. I didn't feel comfortable putting it on my social media. And eventually I decided, you know, I'm going to do it. And I made like a whole separate Instagram for it. And I kind of kept that private as well. And then I started posting stuff on that Instagram and I'm like, I'm going to post it on Facebook at the same time. And I've had people come out of the woodwork, you know, people that I haven't talked to since high school that have reached out to talk to me about real estate investing. How can they get started? Can they participate in my deals? People that have had money to loan, people who've had family properties that they weren't sure how to get rid of and wanted to know if maybe we could help. So definitely get out of your comfort zone and talk about it with anybody and everybody you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's get back. Let's pull ourselves back into the deal. So before we go any further, there's a couple questions I have. The house was $130,000. How did you buy the house? Like, how did you fund it?
Conventional mortgage, 10% down.
Okay, so you applied for a loan. You guys did a contract. You took it there. Did you have any realtor fees in there? Or you guys just do it off on your own?
So Judy wrote the contract up for me, but she wasn't involved in the transaction.
When you were buying it, she wrote the contract up for the purchase?
Yep.
Okay, so she went to look at it. You were like, okay, $130K, I get a realtor, go look at it. And then she wrote up a contract for you, knowing just because the agreement was that when you fixed it up, she would be the one to sell it?
Yeah.
Okay, so that encouraged her to help you on the contract side on the front. And then you went to a bank. What kind of bank? Big bank, small bank, credit union?
Better.com, I think it was.
What was it?
Better.com, Better Mortgages, just an online mortgage broker.
And you said
I didn't know a lot about hard money or how to get access to that or what the qualifications were. I had certainly had heard of it. I didn't have any private money connections at that point. So for me, the only way to buy it, I don't think we had the cash at the time. So it would have I had to get a mortgage.
Okay, so how did you get the down payment and the rehab costs? Like, where did that money come from?
Yeah, so I had the down payment and the rehab costs at the time. So I only had to put 10% down, $13,000 plus some closing costs.
And that all came from, that was money that you had saved up over time in the past?
Yes.
Okay. Was it just sitting in a checking account or was it an investment? Like, what did you have to do?
That was just sitting in cash in a checking account.
Okay. Nice. Okay. So you drove down there, you're living in the house for a month, you're getting contractors in there. How did you get a month off from work?
I didn't. I had to hook internet up at the house. I was working during the day remotely, in my W-2 job, and then in my free time trying to find roofers and painters and contractors.
Okay. Oh, so this was during COVID. So it was all remote work at that time. Were you always in the office before that, and this pushed you out of the office?
I was remote only before COVID.
Okay.
And the entire company eventually became remote only.
Got it. So your kids are little at this time. They're probably like, what, 5 and 1 or something like that?
Yeah.
And your wife is like, cool, go down to Florida, live there for a month. I'm good with that. No problem.
I didn't know how long I was going to be gone for. I stayed for 3 weeks the first time and then left our car there and flew back for like a week to just do things I needed to do at home, and then flew back down again to finish up the project. I had no idea. I was finding these people on like gig sites and Angie's List. And, so we found people, we painted the whole interior, exterior, cleaned up the yard. I found a roofing company that would let me pay with a credit card, and we put a new roof on it. And then I found a granite company that came in, and we swapped all the countertops out. The house was like new on the inside. It was dated, but they hadn't been there in like 5 years, and they only used it occasionally when they would come to the States for vacation. And one big piece I've left out of this, Bill, we have not closed on the house yet at this point. The guy...
Wait. Oh, you were fixing it up while you didn't even own it?
Yeah. So it goes without saying, don't ever do that. But I did. The guy, we got under the contract, and the guy's like, you can go there, you can do whatever you want. And we got about 3 weeks down the road into, like, we're actively rehabbing. I've put a central air conditioning into this. We're painting, we're working on everything. And the title company fires us, and they are really concerned about this transaction. They have no communication with the seller. He's in another country. He doesn't speak English. All their communication with him is going through me, which they thought was weird. We don't have a personal relationship. The seller and I, his deceased wife is on the title. There's all kinds of weird stuff going on. And they said, we don't feel comfortable with your file. And I'm really worried now because I spent a lot of money, working on this house. We get referred to another title company that again fires us after like a week of working on it. And I get a call from their owner who basically accused me of committing some kind of fraud. He wasn't sure what I was up to, but it didn't seem like a legitimate deal to him, and they would not work on the file for us. And I ultimately had to hire an attorney and a CPA to help us figure out some of the probate stuff, to translate documents that were in a foreign language for death certificates. FIRPTA was involved, as you've ever heard of that, like a tax on foreign investors in real property in the United States.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's like a disclosure that you sign for every transaction that if it's a foreign national, you're like, there's no foreign nationals involved that need to withhold taxes and stuff. Yeah.
Right. So they did have to withhold a significant portion of the closing proceeds. And then we have to explain this to this poor old gentleman in another country that we're going to close on this, but you're not going to get all of your money, but I am going to own the house. And then we'll have to file further tax documents for you to get those funds released. So anyways, it got really scary for several weeks when nobody would help us work on the title, but got a good attorney, got a good CPA. We got it taken care of, and we did eventually close on that purchase. We were basically done with the rehab by the time we closed on it.
Hmm. Well, there's a couple things I want to mention. One is, I remember when I was getting started, and probably still right now, like I would put a lot of that stuff on credit cards. So like a granite company typically will take a credit card. Lowe's would always take a credit card. So I'd be buying materials from there and basically ran all of my projects in the very beginning, very similar. I would just try to put it all on credit that I would have to pay for 30 days, or it's just a high interest loan basically to me for a lot of the rehab costs. So pretty much all of my rehab costs, other than some of the labor that those guys needed, like cash or check or those kind of things. But pretty much most of the companies, especially today, would take card. And so that's a lot of how I funded my first few projects as well, is that, and I mean, I wasn't selling them in a month, you know, so I would have to make the payments on that card if I had it. If not, I would carry a balance until I sold it. But I mean, that's an option. A lot of people now, there's companies that set up a bunch of like 0% credit cards and stuff for funding for things like this. So you have 6 months or a year on 0%. So I'd set those up. Like there was a balance transfer card that I did very early on where it was like 0% balance transfers for like 18 months. So I ran up my credit card, got all the points, and then I transferred the balance to a 0% card for just until that house sold. And so that was the way that I funded. What's that?
And we have access to hard money and private money. We still do this. We have access to private money and hard money now, but I still like putting stuff on cards. And you know, we'll rack up a bunch of points, pay the card off. We've done multiple, you know, free trips and hotels from those. So if you can manage it carefully and you know, pay it off, and not, you know, some of the interest rates on those can be crazy. So I don't recommend, you know, running a balance for a long time, but it is a great way to take advantage of some perks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I was really doing a lot of rehabs and spending a lot of money on my Capital One card at 2% cash back, I was getting $40,000-$50,000 a year back on that card. And that's tax-free money, basically. It's a check that just shows up once a year. So I'd get all that. I loved it. Okay, let me talk quick. Your wife was totally on board with this, and like she was into it, she was cool with it. You guys talk about it. Tell me a little bit about that, because I mean, you were gone for a long time. It's probably a lot of stress back and forth. You got young kids. What was that?
You know, I get asked this question a lot by friends and family. Like, is your wife okay with this? Is she involved? She's not extremely involved in the business, but she does have a totally different risk tolerance than I do. I have a pretty high risk tolerance. You know, if I've done the research and done the math, I'll make big bets that are calculated. She struggles with that. And so we will pull out the whiteboard and I will whiteboard deals so she can see the math herself. And that usually puts her at ease. But I give her credit I mean, she gives me a ton of autonomy. She doesn't ask a lot of questions. Once I've walked her through the deal, and now she's, you know, we're doing a lot more deals, so she doesn't get involved in every one. But occasionally, we picked up a couple very large waterfront properties recently with a lot bigger numbers than we've been working with in the past. And so we went through the numbers again on the whiteboard to show, you know, so she could feel comfortable that it made sense and we had a good exit plan. But she's been extremely supportive and giving me the flexibility to take some risks.
That's awesome. I think that's really important. And then also, like after this first deal, like you said, as things get a little bit more expensive or you're doing a little bit more, you're coming back to the table and saying, hey, are you still cool with this? Let's look at this one. And this is the path. That communication, I think, is really important, especially what I realized early on in my journey is I made the agreement that I'm not going to be around for a year. I'm going to be building this business. But then I didn't go back for like after a year saying, hey, are you still good with me continuing? Are you still good? And so that's like just kind of a regular struggle. I just move really fast and she kind of like lives in the present. And so I have to really remember to come back and say, hey, you know, I'm going to buy this company or I'm going to start this other company. Are you cool with that? Like, what does this year look like? I'm going to be doing a little bit more travel. Are you okay with that? Here's the outcome that we're going to see from that. Here's some of my goals, some of the reasons why I want to do this stuff instead of just stay at home and just do nothing, you know, and it's just not
my thing. No, it's a great lesson. It's a great lesson to keep those lines of communication open. And I struggle with that. You get going and, you know, we had a few weeks back where I bought five properties in a week and I just got busy and I was heads down making sure we made all five of these happen and then told her and she was like, oh, well, you know, you never mentioned it. And you know, I felt bad for that. And I also love this. And so I can do it all day, every day. I can do it on Saturday and Sunday and I will sometimes. And I have to remember to kind of pull myself away from it and make sure I'm spending time with the family and taking care of their needs as well. But it's just easy to get caught up in the work when you're having fun with it.
For sure. Yeah. And that is important. It's also important for us to do something that we enjoy. And so anybody out there that's listening is like, if you like something, it's okay. It can definitely like consume you though. So definitely be careful with some of that stuff and have as much balance as you want to have, with it all. So let's get back to the house. So we've got a $130,000 purchase. We had all these problems. Go on. You had to hire an attorney and a CPA to deal with it all. You did all the rehab. You were living down there, going back and forth. You spent $22,000 on the rehab, and then you were pretty much done the rehab by the time you actually bought the house. So, when what happened? You bought the house, you fixed it up, and now you listed it. Let's talk about like all of that.
Yeah. So I did give the listing to Judy at the firm in Orlando. And we listed the house for $240,000. And within about 4 hours, we got a cash offer for $235,000 from a big company that was buying up all kinds of property in Central Florida as rentals. And we accepted that offer.
Was there other traffic? Like, did you get a bunch of other offers, or
was we had a lot of activity? Yeah, we were busy. And remember, this is COVID, and this was still kind of before real estate blew up during COVID. This was like the scary part at the beginning of COVID when
real estate. Yeah, I was going to say, what month is this?
So we bought it in July, but this is probably like September at this point.
Yeah, this is the time where people are wondering if. So right now, just let me paint the picture here. This is September 2020. So this is the time where we're mid-election year. So this is like 2 months before the election. People are freaking out about real estate. They're wondering if what's going to happen. People are selling off their properties, thinking the real estate market's going to crash. Everybody's talking yes. about that. So you've got 235 in hand cash and other activity, but it's not necessarily like really easy to get into the house. People are like uncomfortable even going to showings around that time, pretty much.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting time. When you flew back to Michigan on that plane, you were probably like one of a handful of people that were on the flight, I would guess.
God, I don't remember, but probably. I remember it was very scary. I mean, that was like the real scary part of COVID still. But it was cool being in Florida because they were so much more laid back, and I hadn't had a haircut in like 6 months, and I got to Florida and they're like, yeah, you can get a haircut.
Yeah, totally. Everywhere else is shut down, and Florida's like, DeSantis is like, we're open. We're open for business. Okay, so cash offer 235, where we look back and are like, man, I bet if you just like held out, you probably could have got like 250. I was expecting you to say it went way over 240. So 235 cash, they probably were closing quickly. How did that all go? Any issues with the closing or anything like that?
No issues with the closing. And part of the reason for just pouncing on the offer was I was really worried about COVID and that we might see like a massive drop in real estate prices. So I wanted this thing sold quickly, and it was $5,000 off from our asking price. It was cash. So I felt good that they were going to come through. So yeah, we took that. We had no issues with the closing. And one really cool part about this property that I left out is when we bought the house, we bought it furnished, and I gave away or sold everything that was inside of it. But there was a car in the garage that the guy had mentioned we could have the car. He signed the title over to me eventually. But the car ended up being a 1995 Pontiac Firebird that had 3,600 miles on it. Wow. They used it. They bought it new, and they used it when they came to the States on vacation. It started and ran. I drove it while I was there. And so I shipped the car back to Michigan. It cost about $1,200, and had a mechanic clean out the lines and clean up the car for me. But I mean, it smelled like new on the inside. It had the original window sticker, and we sold it at a collection consignment car dealership. And almost covered all of our rehab expenses. We sold the car for $18,500. And we paid a 10% commission on that. So we got about $16,000 out of the car, which left us at about $6,000 of total expenses for the property.
Wow. And then you sold some of the other stuff from inside the house too.
Yeah. I sold the old appliances and the furniture.
Yeah. So 235 cash offer. Did some of these big companies, like these hedge funds and stuff that are buying rentals, they retrade? So they do an inspection and then retrade. Was there any of that negotiation afterwards, or do they close at 235, no problem?
Yeah, they close at 235, no renegotiation.
Cool. So what'd you make on it? You bought it for 130, you sold it for 235, you did $22,000 in rehab, so that's, let's see, 105 minus 22, so you're somewhere around like 80K is what they show on TV. Let's not include the Pontiac, we'll add it in at the end. So 80K, what did you actually make on it? Like, what was the net profit on that deal?
So, you know, after closing costs on both sides and holding costs and some travel costs, I've got it at 57.4 before the Pontiac. And then add the Firebird back in. And we were at about 70.
Yeah, 73K. 73,400. That's incredible. So what did that do for your confidence and plan? So you flipped that one, you made like $70,000. It's probably worth all the travel. Your wife was probably like, cool, if you want to be gone for a month in the future and bring home $70,000, that's fine. A couple questions. How did that feel? Like how did that shift kind of your belief and plan? And then what did you do with the money?
Yeah, I mean, it felt amazing. It was a huge confidence builder. It was a little surreal because it was something I'd wanted to do for so long. And we finally made it all the way through a whole transaction and we made a lot of profit. I mean, it's well above what our average profit is today. So it continues to be one of the best deals that I ever did. The money just went into savings. And then In the following year, the beginning of the following year, we put that money into buying an auction property.
Mm, nice. So you use that to kind of fund the next one after that.
Yeah. We started paying cash for our deals after that and did for quite a while.
Nice. And how do you fund the deals now?
Exclusively hard money. I do have a private money partner that's been involved on a couple of deals, but you know, I was really leveraging my own money and it just got a little scary a couple of times as you got 3, 4, 5 properties out. You're not just paying for the property, but a significant rehab costs as well and other holding costs. So as much as possible now, I try to keep our money in the bank. We have a great relationship with Kiavi and the pro account. We have all the 7-figure perks that come along with that. And so we get 100% financing on purchase price and 100% of rehab is reimbursable.
That's awesome. All right. We got to wrap up. This was, we went a lot longer on this deal than I thought. I'm really excited about it though. This was really cool. I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned here that I haven't necessarily talked about on the show before. Specifically, my favorite one was really the fact that your father-in-law knew to bring this to you somehow. And
yeah, he's a good guy. He's, despite not speaking English, he's actually become a pretty important mentor to me.
Do you speak Spanish?
I can hold my own, but we use a translator a lot as well when we're together.
Nice. What's some advice that you would give to some people? You were sitting on the sideline for a long time and watching, you know, the podcast. You mentioned risk on the show very early on. What's some things that you would say to somebody who's kind of sitting on the sidelines, listening to podcasts, reading books, just learning it, but has like a real desire to do something?
Yeah. I mean, if you've taken care of the education piece, you've got to step out of your comfort zone, get over the imposter syndrome. It is still risk, but it's calculated risk, right? You've done the research, you ran the numbers. If the numbers make sense, at some point you have to step out. So get comfortable with taking risk, calculated risk. Get yourself around other like-minded people. It's been huge for me to be around other high caliber investors in the online groups that I'm in 7-figure flipping, Altitude and Runway. It's been so motivating to me to be around people that are running big, successful 7- and 8-figure real estate businesses and having access to them to be able to ask questions and bounce ideas off of as you're scaling and they've been through all this before and they can talk you through how they've done it. That'd be my advice. Get around people that are doing what you're doing and get comfortable taking risk.
You know, you took a long time to join the Runway program, listen to the podcast for like years and years and years. Who do you think it's right for after being through it? And now you've moved up to Altitude. Who do you think that program's right for? Like what kind of person?
Yeah, I mean, I think Runway is great for anybody, whether you've you've done a deal or two or a few deals and you're trying to figure out how to scale that, or even if you've never done a deal, there are plenty of people in the group that are trying to take down their first deal. So even if you haven't started, and I did have very much the impression like I should be doing a lot of deals before I joined this group. And that was a false belief. There's so much value to joining as a new investor. And I wish I had joined a lot sooner. And if you scaled a business and you're starting to scale and desire to get bigger, Altitude is a great place to be. We're still pretty small. You think you're doing something at 12 deals or 18, and that we're targeting to do this year. There's people in there that are actively doing 20 or 30 deals right now, or maybe even more. And it's so cool to be around them and get their guidance along the way.
Well, I'm thankful you came on, and some great advice for everybody. It's really cool. I'm excited for you. What's next for you? And then how can people find out more about you or get in contact with you that want to?
Yeah, we're going to keep scaling. We set a goal this year. I had initially 18 properties, but Yuri and Todd told me it wasn't good enough. So we ramped it up to 24. I think that'll look at like buying 24 houses this year, hopefully exit on 18 of them. And then we are very keen to continue to build out our rental portfolio to generate some passive income and hopefully some tax advantages. If people want to get a hold of me, I'm at Flip with Josh 14 on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook, Joshua Walworth. You can email me, josh@fieldstonehomebuyers.com. We need money, houses, and contractors. So if you're in Michigan, wholesaling, lending money, or doing trades work, we'd love to hear from you.
Awesome. Well, Josh, thanks for being here. I know this show is going to help a lot of people, and I appreciate you sharing what you got with everybody, man. I really appreciate it. And we'll see you guys on the next show. Oh, before I go, if you are interested in joining Runway, you can go to 7figurerunway.com, the number 7figurerunway.com, and fill out an application. You can just talk to my team. There's like no pressure on that call. It's a very much a consultative type call. We'll figure out where you are, where you want to be. We even go through some of like your personality profile, those kind of things on some of those, just to understand, like we've had a lot of people get on calls with us and we know kind of where to point them. And it might even be stick with the podcast. It might be get Bill's book. It might be something where it's, hey, look, we're not going to invite you into Runway right now. It's just because it's not the right time for you. So I really want to encourage you to go to that website, fill out an application. It's not a commitment or anything like that. So the number 7figurerunway.com, and just talk with us, get to know us a little bit and see if we're right for you. And we'll do the same thing to make sure that you're right for us. So have a great day. We'll see you on the next show. Bye.